So what do you think the right gets wrong?
Oh, okay, that's a good question.
So if you were going to vote, who would you be leaning towards? Did having a baby change any of your political views or values? A bunch of people asked this question. They wanted your opinion on what the most valuable qualities to look for in a man are, and also values men should look for in women.
There are so many things. Men are kind of told, like, build yourself up a lot, which is good. You should build yourself up. But it's like women are told, do what makes you happy, or like follow your heart and stuff like that. Don't waste your time. Like, there are these posts where people will blow up at each other over like a trivial thing, and everyone in the comments is like, it's not actually about this thing. You guys have deeper issues, and this just happened to be the straw that broke the camel's back.
I also think one mistake people can make when they're dating is this is a mistake that I've made, so that's why I'm bringing it up, but is Lauren Chen, welcome to my podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. It's been a while since we spoke, so this is fun.
It has. I can't remember the last time. You might have still been in Canada.
I think so.
So are you in Nashville now?
Yes, we're in Nashville. We've been here since last February, so over a year now, and we're loving it. Like, not 2023 February, 2022.
And you love it? Improvement over... Were you in Quebec?
Yes, we were in Quebec. We were outside of Montreal. So not only we were in Canada, but we were in authoritarian French Canada that literally had some of the strictest COVID measures in the entire world. So we were really glad to be out of there.
I feel like, so Toronto was really bad. And I think the only place that was worse than Toronto was Quebec.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's a true statement in many ways, not just COVID measures. So yeah, no, Toronto, it's crazy because I used to remember going to visit when I was a kid, and I thought it was kind of cool, almost like New York.
Yeah.
In a bad way, that's true now. And that, like New York, the crime is crazy. The cost of living is crazy. I just don't understand how people are doing it in Toronto.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I hadn't been there in a couple of years after I moved to the US, and we went down this one street called Sherbourne downtown. And it was so much worse than it was during COVID. So it hadn't turned around at all. It was really scary. And I'm pretty used to like living, I always lived downtown and there were always homeless people. And I was like, that's totally fine. This was like people on drugs, very concerning. And so that's still going on. It's sad.
No, definitely. And I feel like Canada has been so lucky for the longest time. The idea that, oh, all big cities are just kind of crime ridden, homeless people, drug addicts on the street. That didn't used to be the case in Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, places like Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, for the longest time, they were almost European level of crime, despite being urban North American areas. But that's really changed, especially over the last 10 years. My parents lived in Ottawa for a spell. And Ottawa, if you're American, if you've never been there, it's basically the quaintest, cutest city, or at least it used to be. But now, similar problems. There are homeless people who are aggressive on drugs on the street. You know, there are stabbings that are happening. It's like, what happened to, you know, this perfect, almost idyllic country where we had all these resources, everyone was friendly, got along, we didn't have any problems. It seems like literally now every problem is getting worse in Canada.
I don't know if people in Montreal were ever friendly. Do you have that?
True.
Do you speak French?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not amazing. My husband, he's perfectly fluent. I can get by, but I wouldn't, like, for example, the things we're probably going to be talking about in this interview, I don't think I'd be able to do that in French.
Okay, that's still pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of make it mandatory. When I moved to Quebec for the first time, I was born there, but I didn't grow up in Quebec. I grew up in Asia. So I was in, I think, fifth grade the first time I went to school in Quebec, and I just literally was in immersion. So I just had half of my schooling in French. So it was kind of like, okay, you're going to learn this or you're not going to understand anything and make no friends. So didn't really have a choice.
Wow. Okay. Before we get into things, can you give a brief background for anybody who's not familiar with you of who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. So I'm a Blaze TV host as well as a TP USA contributor and I guess YouTuber. All of my content is up on YouTube and I talk about a lot of different things, kind of like you. I talk about current events and social issues, but I do that on my main channel, Lauren Chen, but I also talk a lot about pop culture and entertainment news on my Mediaholic channel. So I kind of like to do both. And I feel like nowadays, especially those realms, politics, social issues, and entertainment, they're increasingly overlapping. Just because everything is political nowadays. So there's even times where I want to talk about a story, but I'm like, hang on, which which category did this fall under? Because it's not always so clear.
That is so true. I feel like American politics are even worse. Like, I remember watching American politics when I was young and being like, oh, this is just entertainment compared to Canadian politics. And now everything's kind of blended together, maybe because of social media. Yeah.
You're definitely right. I mean, we have like Katy Perry when she was wearing that like Hillary Clinton, like go vote outfit. It's almost like American Idol, American politics at this point. So there's a lot of overlap there. And it's such a stark contrast to Canadian politics, which is still almost more like British politics in that it's very dry. It's not, you know, money, showbiz flashiness where you have, you know, people on campaigns who basically have like millions of dollars of like hair, makeup and wardrobe. Like, no, Canadian politics is not like that at all.
No. Trudeau might be a little bit like that now. A bit.
Although whatever he's spending on hair and makeup, he might need to spend more because I still don't know what was happening with those eyebrows that one time. That was weird.
Hey, everyone. If you are unfortunate enough to be suffering from a mood disorder or some sort of virus or cold or want to increase your lifespan, detoxify, feel perked up, you should try sauning. If you watch Huberman or Rhonda Patrick or Joe Rogan or any health person, you've heard of sauning, and I can't really describe how much it helps you feel better. We're getting exposed to so many chemicals and toxins in the modern world, we need help detoxing just to survive. Bond Charge is my go-to sauna blanket. It works by helping you detox and sweat. It raises your heart rate like exercise, so it burns calories. It's super easy to set up and clean, and you can even travel with it. Seems to improve my mood by about 30%. After I use it, which is significant, that's usually how I judge the efficacy of things, by mood. Free shipping, easy returns and exchanges, 30-day trial, 12 months warranty, it has everything. It gives the same benefits as a built-in sauna using far infrared panels, but it's super affordable and can fit anywhere. Go to bondcharge.com/MP and use code MP to save 15%. That's bondcharge.com/MP and use code MP to save 15%, linked in the comments. Okay, so you have a baby, right? How recent was that?
Oh, well, I guess now she's technically a toddler, not a baby anymore, which is like she's growing up, but she's 17 months. So she's born April of 2022.
Wow. Okay. How have you managed to, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have my daughter's 6 now, which is insane. So she just went into grade 1.
It's crazy. She's gorgeous, by the way. I've seen her photos on Instagram. She looks so much like you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I should hope so. I had to birth her. So like, I should hope so. How did you manage continuing social media and continuing all the different projects you're involved in and also taking care of a baby? Was that tricky?
Oh, it is tricky. Like, it's definitely something that I don't think would work for everybody. And my husband and I, we were really, really conscious. Like when we, I guess, got married and were planning to have kids, that we both wanted to be able to be home as much as possible. So my husband and I, we've worked together, I guess, on the social media video stuff for over 5 years for sure at this point. So we're in a position where if one of us is working, the other can be watching Riley. And we also now have at least my parents close by to help out. So we are very blessed in the setup that we have. And I know, like, in the conservative movement, we all want, obviously, moms and dads too, but especially moms, as involved with their kids as possible. And I've seen some shaming from moms that do still have to work. I feel like I'm in a position where, like, I get to stay home with my kid and I get to work, but I know not everyone is that fortunate. And I do wish that people, especially in the conservative sphere, would understand that, it's not a good thing if a mom is putting her career before her children or a father. Like, children should come first, but we also live in a real world where it's, for most people, not sustainable to only have one income. And, you know, acting like you're blind to that is not, it's not very endearing for the majority of people.
Yeah. I had a weird experience. When I had Scarlett, I was in a very liberal, I was like downtown Toronto, very liberal neighborhood. So any of the neighbors that came by were like 35 with kids and I was 25. And it was always, oh, what do you do? And I had like just had a baby. So I was like, well, what I do now is like recover from giving birth. But like, what do you do? And I was like, well, I'm staying at home. This was just for the you know, when she was really little, for the first like 9 months or so, I was like, I'm staying at home with the baby. That's what I'm doing. And it was kind of like, oh, that's what you're spending your time doing. And then, wow. So that was like the liberal side. And then you get to the conservative side, and I'm working now. And the conservative side is kind of the same, except complete opposite, where it's, oh, you're working. And it'd be nice to have like a little bit of an in-between sometimes.
Yeah, no, it is hard. Like, there are very, very competing expectations of what you're supposed to do as a mom, which ultimately, when you have your baby, basically as a mom, like, I think it's pretty rare for a mom to be like, oh, I don't want to be able to provide for my kid or spend time with them. So it's not helpful really for most moms. And I'm in some group mom chats, and we talk a lot about how we're shamed one way or the other for having to work or not working enough, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? So I've got a bunch of fun questions for you here. So what do you think the right gets wrong?
Well, I mean, we just kind of touched on that, like shaming. And it's not just, you know, shaming moms who might have to work to provide for, like, help provide for their families. It's also, I mean, I've seen right wingers like shaming, you know, 20 some year olds who are still living at home because rents are so expensive and they're trying to juggle going to college while also saving up. Like, I don't think that's, you know, and it's crazy because I saw this one account that was, I tweeted out something about how I don't think it's a bad thing to stay at home while you're in school and save money. I think it's actually pretty common in most cultures outside of North America, especially. This one account was just lambasting, basically lazy Gen Z millennials who do nothing. They just want to, I guess, mooch off their parents. And I clicked their profile and, you know, was scrolling through. They were complaining about inflation eating up their savings and making it unaffordable and unsustainable. And it's like, so you understand the problem. Do you not have any sympathy for young people who are just coming into the job market? So I think that's not helpful. Yeah, I think just in general, obviously, you want people to have personal responsibility and to take control of their destinies. But at the same time, that doesn't change the fact that if you're slamming Joe Biden for his terrible policies, obviously it's because those policies are making it harder on people. I don't think it's being a bleeding hearted lib to acknowledge that, yeah, it's hard now. And it's not the worst thing if a you know, student especially is living with their parents instead of roommates to save money, or if a mom has to take up some shifts because it's just too hard on only her husband's salary.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. I can get behind that. How did you meet your husband and find somebody who was kind of willing to, or interested, not willing, but like interested in helping the social media thing you do? I do the same thing with my husband, by the way, which right. is like when I was looking, well, I wasn't even really looking for somebody. I was just hoping more than looking. But I thought it was going to be very tricky because I figured everything I'm doing online, plus wanting to have kids, I'd need somebody who could help me and who wanted to right. build the same things that I wanted to build. And so I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to find anybody, but you seem to have a similar setup with your husband where you're both working towards the same goals. How'd you manage that?
Well, I mean, like you mentioned, it is kind of like when you have a job like this and you want a family, it's almost like you're not just looking for a partner in one area. They need to be a partner in all areas, like not just like in the relationship, but also with like parenthood and also the business. It's kind of hard to separate them when you do some like a job like ours. So I actually met my husband when I was 21. So I think I was like just starting my YouTube channel, and it was still just something I did as a hobby on the side. I never would have imagined it would be a career. And so we started dating, and then eventually YouTube became like a part-time job and then a full-time job. And, you know, my husband, he was still a student because I graduated early. And he graduated a little bit later. So he was still a student at the time, and he was looking for a different job. And we were just getting, or I was just getting a contract, my first like kind of official contract with CRTV, which is now Blaze TV. Cool. And I was looking for an editor. So I was like, well, hey, do you want to edit my videos and kind of, you know, do that? It might be weird. And people cautioned us against it, you know, because I understand how that could get messy. But yeah, I mean, it worked out, and we've kind of been together and working together ever since. And over that time, like our business has changed. We don't just do YouTube videos now. Obviously his role has changed. Like now we deal with like advertisers and different contracts, like stuff with TPUSA and Blaze, and he's kind of there to help manage it all. And it's been kind of crazy to see how it's evolved as a business. And I'm very fortunate that he's been there throughout it all. Cause I mean, I'm sure you understand it can be lonely doing what we do because it's not like you're going to the office every day, right? So there's not a lot of people who you can talk to that might understand exactly what you're going through. So having, you know, like a spouse where you're able to kind of vent about whatever's happening online, it's really nice.
Yeah, I feel that. When I first started doing on, so I think you started before me for sure. But I got more involved in 2018. In 2017, I was kind of working in the background on Dad's brand. And that was like all remote work. And I was going to like coffee shops just to be around people so that I wasn't like at home on my computer just 24/7 being lonely. So yeah, I feel that. It's fun though. I wouldn't change it, but I like, and I get people cautioning, like it's tough to be able to work with someone and be in a relationship with them. Cause then you're with them all the time.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. You have to be with the right person. Otherwise you just go crazy.
Exactly. And I don't know if it's like this for you guys. But it's like, I've gotten pet peeves about my husband that I'm sure most spouses don't have. Like he doesn't CC me as much as I want to be CC'd.
Oh yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. Which is like a very specific criticism to have of someone you're in a relationship with, but it's like, yeah, like you do get to know your spouse in a whole different dimension. Cause they're not just like your That's romantic funny. Or like domestic partner. They're your business partner too.
That's really funny. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I just had that conversation with Jordan, which was just, he's like, because he gets annoyed at me for not CCing him too. I was like, you can't get annoyed at me if you're not CCing me. Yeah, right. I feel and that.
His excuse is like, well, you can just ask me. It's like, or I could just be included from the beginning and know in real time kind of like what the status is. So I don't even need to ask you. So I could just read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you taken a personality test before?
Yes, I have taken the Myers-Briggs one, I think it's called, or Myers-Briggs one. I've heard that it's kind of been, it's fallen out of favor as the standard one, but that's, I think, the only one that I've taken.
You should try, Dad has a understandmyself.com and it gives you your big five personality. I'd just be interested to see yours. Because I think as a, like, especially as a woman in the more conservative space, I think you have to be fairly disagreeable compared to the average female. And so if you're also telling your husband, like, CC me, and then I'd be more involved. I'd just be interested to see what your agreeableness is. Do you think you're somebody who's more disagreeable?
I feel like I am pretty agreeable. Whether I'm more disagreeable than the average woman, I think I'm more agreeable than the average man for sure. I think my mom is definitely a more disagreeable woman. So I'm more agreeable than her. But that is like you mentioned, being a woman and conservative, especially in the conservative sphere, I have wondered whether my personality tends toward more of a masculine archetype in some ways, just because of that. And because like, I do feel like my Myers-Briggs personality type is INTJ. So I do feel like I'm less emotional than a lot of women. That's for sure.
Okay. Maybe it could be that. My mom's also way more disagreeable than me. She was so disagreeable growing up. It was unbelievable. My dad was like the agreeable one. So maybe taking Same. After her. Yeah. Weird, huh? That's strange.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Did having a baby change any of your political views or values? Or do you think take anything more seriously or less seriously than you did before having a baby?
I don't know if you encountered this, but I mean, obviously anytime you hear about something bad happening to children, it's awful and terrible. But especially since I got pregnant and had Riley, now it, like, I hear a story about something bad happening to especially like a young baby or a toddler, and I will keep me up at night for days and days. And I don't think I wasn't that empathetic toward children before I actually had one. And now I've gotten much more like, if you do anything to a kid, I don't care. Like, you need to be strung up. I'm sorry. And I'm not really for the death penalty, just because I'm very critical of state power. And I feel like there's a little bit of a conflict of interest there when it's kind of like the state is trying you and sentencing you. I feel like it can be a recipe for disaster, but at the same time, if you're a pedophile or an abuser of children, like, why are we keeping you alive though? Like, yeah, like we can discuss, but it's like, ultimately, like if we know you did it, like, why are you being kept alive is kind of where I'm at. And, you know, there was all that conversation surrounding The Sound of Freedom. I wasn't able to watch that just because I knew it would be too upsetting.
Okay. So yeah. I was just having this conversation literally 2 days ago with Jordan, about, you know, what brain changes you experience after you have a kid. That exact same thing happened to me. I've always been like, obviously that's always been a concern. I'm sure it's been a concern for you too, but there is some sort of brain change where you're more impacted emotionally. Or if you see somebody else's kid, like I remember before having kids, if it was somebody else's kid and it was kind of like they were being bratty, it was more removed than now. There's definitely more compassion involved that I think was just brain changes from having a baby. It's been wild. I feel exactly the same way where it hits on an emotional level it didn't hit on before.
No, that's exactly it. And I, you know, with kids misbehaving now, I like you said, I used to kind of just be like, oh, removed from it or even kind of annoyed from it. But now I am much more quick to put myself in that kid's shoes. Like, you're probably tired. It's been a hard day. Like no one else wants to be on this airplane. I'm upset. Of course, like it would be hard for a kid to do that. So there've definitely been mom brain changes that have happened. And those have, I think, also affected my politics.
Yeah. Okay. I've had the same thing. I feel like my reaction to kids screaming on a plane might be a little bit different. It's more like that parent should be shot. That's more of my reaction. Is like, what are they doing to that child to make it scream? Although sometimes there are earaches, like things happen on planes. Sometimes the kid's sick, so it's a little bit different. So I don't know why that's more my reaction, but more anger towards the parents than I think I had before.
Than the baby.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. No, poor little baby. Okay, so you're not able to vote in America then because you're Canadian, right?
Yeah, so I think the soonest I'd be able to vote here if I did like go through citizenship would be like with every paperwork and stuff, like at least 5-6 years or something like that.
Yeah, and are you planning, you don't have to tell me, but are you planning on going through with it?
I don't know, like there are legal ramifications to that as well as because right now I do have two nationalities. I am Canadian and I also I'm a Hong Kong national. So I'm not quite sure what I guess legal process would be in regard to that. Cause I know you can be dual Canadian and US for sure. I don't know how that works with Hong Kong or even what the status of Hong Kong will be by the time I'm eligible. So that's kind of another thing to consider.
Yeah, I thought about it for a while because Jordan was like, you're going to be an American. I was like, you married an immigrant. Sorry. I know Canada doesn't count as like immigrant in your mind, but like I'm not American. I'm Canadian. And I don't think I'm going to go through with it. I'm here on a work visa right now. And it's a lot. America holds a lot of power when you have an American passport, especially if you end up moving out of America, then it's kind of a mess.
Yeah, especially for the tax reasons alone. I mean, Uncle Sam has like worldwide tax. So that, I mean, I love America, but also that's definitely something to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So if you were going to vote though, who would you be leaning towards in the next election?
I mean, I don't think people would be surprised to hear that obviously I would support the Republican candidate. Now, I know a lot of people have real big feelings about what's going on in the primaries, Trump versus DeSantis, but I'm someone who's of the belief, like, I have criticisms and, I mean, pros for both Trump and DeSantis, but, I mean, ultimately, either one of them is better than Joe Biden or I think anyone who the Democrats would offer up right now. So it's kind of just like, yeah, I would side with the Republicans, and I'm actually... Vivek, he says a lot of stuff that I agree with, but I think like a lot of people, I'm just kind of, you know, there's the question of is he just going with the flow a little bit too much? Can we trust him to live his values once he's elected in office? That's hard because he is like, he's so young, he's new to the scene in terms of politics. So it's almost like he's a bit of an unknown in that regard.
Yeah, that's fair. How do you feel about Kennedy?
So I have a lot of especially family members who are big Kennedy fans, and I do like a lot of what he does. I love the pushback on things like all of the vaccine mandates. And I think he is actually someone who is interested in criticizing and pushing back against big pharma, where it's the American medical system is such a mess. And I know the Canadian one is too, but I feel like oftentimes if you criticize one, people think you're in favor of the other. But I have criticisms of both. I think neither one is good. And I think especially the stranglehold that Big Pharma has on American medicine, I think it's detrimental to people's health. We're just being pumped full of pills instead of actually making lifestyle changes that can make us healthier. So I like that he's willing to speak out against that. And I think there are too many politicians who are Republicans and Democrats who are frankly just bought and paid for when it comes to Big Pharma lobbyists. But that said, he is still a leftist. He's not, you know, a woke Elizabeth Warren type of leftist, but I wouldn't support him in an election for sure. Maybe a specific cabinet appointment. If there was a task force to go against the vaccine manufacturers, yes, let's put RFK on there. But just in general, no, he's too much of a leftist for me.
I feel like I got dragged into like liking Republicans when I don't think I grew up that way at all. How did you grow up? Did you grow up conservative? Like, is your family conservative, or is that something that you kind of chose at some point?
So I grew up with my family being pretty apolitical, especially growing up in Asia. The political scene is just so different there anyway. Mm. But definitely, I would say mostly apolitical. I really don't remember any discussions of politics in the house growing up, but socially my parents were, I would say for sure, more conservative, and not even, I guess, explicitly, but it's just, you know, I look at some of the things that are being pushed by more progressive people, and it's like, okay, that never would have flown when I was a kid. You know, the idea of like even having like a boy sleep over at my house or something like that, that would not have flown. I had very firm boundaries growing up, which I think is a good thing to have when you're a kid, and like very loving and caring parents. But I knew that obviously there are consequences for actions. There are expectations that I had upon me, and I was expected to live up to them. So I started getting interested in, I guess, more philosophy before politics. And I think, you know, I was reading a lot of like through my brother. I have an older brother who kind of introduced me to a lot of this stuff, people like Locke. And so I think that kind of influenced me politically. And then when I first started getting into actual politics, it was kind of in like the Bush era. And I knew George Bush was like, before I was even familiar with politics, there would just be like jokes about Republicans. And I kind of was like, yeah, like, sure, this sounds good because I'm basically a kid and I don't really know what's going on. But then like when I learned more, I didn't necessarily side with the Republicans, especially at that point, because it was during, I mean, 9/11, the Iraq war. And I'm not a neocon. I'm not an interventionist in any way, shape or form, but I did know that like people who were, I guess, advocating for a lot of the more left-wing or socialist policies, that they didn't represent me at all. So,
yeah. Okay.
I don't have a walk-away story. I wish I did, though. It would be a lot more catchy if I were like, I was a raging lib, but now look at me.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting. I don't know if I was like apolitical, probably. I don't think I cared about, I still don't really care about politics, to be honest.
Fair.
But I was definitely brought up in more of a liberal household. Like, dad's such a, like, he's a fairly conservative, like, figurehead now. And my family was not particularly conservative. Like my parents are so open. Like we could negotiate. I did way more than I should have been able to do as a teenager. Like you were talking about having people sleep over. Maybe that's because I had a younger brother, but we had sleepovers all the time. Not that they were like weird sexual orgies or something, but like we had sleepovers. There weren't very many boundaries if you could argue your case.
Right.
And I don't even know if the cases were argued very well, but like there weren't very many boundaries. It was kind of like figure it out yourself type of thing, which was probably, I don't know if that was helpful or not. I don't know what would have happened if there were firm boundaries that I fought against. There were some and I fought against them. So I don't know if it would have helped if there were more firm boundaries, but it was pretty like my upbringing was pretty liberal, I would say. Liberal, but Dad didn't want to be told like what to do by anybody. So when it started getting to the point where the government was saying, oh, you have to do this, you have to do that, then everybody switched directions pretty quickly. Yeah.
And it's interesting how, like, there are a lot of, I think, more libertarian people out there who used to identify more with the left, but now identify more with the right, even though they're not necessarily more conservative, but just because they are more libertarian or libertine, the I guess, flavor of leftists nowadays, they're very, very authoritarian. They definitely want to tell you what to do.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. Okay, what are your thoughts? Oh, actually, first, before we get into that, do you know what you're going to do with, I know this is a far off in the future, but do you plan on homeschooling? Do you know what you're going to do, given the situation with elementary schools is such a mess? At least you're in Tennessee.
Right. We definitely at least plan on homeschooling. I know life can throw a lot of things in our direction, and I guess it depends on, you know, our specific kids once they get to that age, but that would be ideal if we could homeschool. And I know there are things like homeschooling pods and like online curriculum where it's like you don't need to just be left on your own and try to figure out like, okay, when should my kid be reading? I don't know. So it's comforting to know that you have support now if you're a parent and want to do that, just because I'm at a stage where I do not trust educators at all. I've seen way too many videos of, even in private schools, even in charter schools, so-called Christian schools, crazy stuff happening. Not to mention that, I mean, I feel like, and it's a fine line between wanting to protect your kids versus overly sheltering them. But there are just like a lot of even social influences in schools that, you know, I remember like seeing kids be bullied or just, I guess, bad things happening to my peers that shouldn't have happened to them. And I don't think I should have even been witnessing at the age that I did. And, you know, I know there are some people who say, well, yeah, but they need to be toughened up and stuff like that. It's like, well, the world is going to toughen you up regardless. And I just don't think that being punched as a 7-year-old is especially helpful. I don't think anybody deserves that. So, there are just a lot of reasons why I would prefer to homeschool. What I love about what happened during COVID, there were a lot of negatives, but I think a lot of pushback started during COVID when parents realized what was going on in schools, what their kids were learning or being brainwashed with. And I think there's also just a lot of fatigue surrounding the increasing lack of performance from a lot of public schools. So it's been great to see that school choice has been a huge movement that's been growing, like charter schools, they're becoming more popular. Homeschooling is becoming more popular. There's just so many more choices for parents in education, which I think is just so, so important. Because I also don't think that it's one size fits all. I know I've always been a really good independent learner. I'm happy to, and I did do independent study classes from really the time I was like 13, and I love them, but I know that there are a lot of kids who just would not be able to function like that alone with a book. Oh, hey, here, learn this. And it doesn't make them a worse learner. So I think it's also probably, we may need to pivot our approach depending on like what our daughter or other kids prefer and what their learning is like.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience with my kid, like Scarlett. When I was little, I was just reading all the time. And I think I could have done everything like myself,
right,
if you just put things in front of me. And she's way more social and artistic than I was, and just different. So I was like, we could just set her up exactly the way that I would be optimized learning. And like, nope, not exactly. She's an entirely different human.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of cool to see that with kids, like their own personality develop and how they're just different from you. Because there's a lot of people who I think believe that it's all social conditioning. We're just blank slates when we're born. And then it's just our environment that shapes us. But even like already seeing how my daughter is different than me, I'm like, where did that come from? I did not, like, this is not something she picked up from me. I don't do this. So it's like she's such a climber. She wants to climb everything. She is so, and I'm like, I am the least active person on the planet. I asked my mom, was I doing all this when I was younger? She's like, no. And it's like, yeah. So I don't know what this is from. Probably my husband's side.
Yeah, funny. That's funny. Scarlett doesn't climb. She's more like me when I was little, at least in that way. So she like tricked me. I was like, oh, it's a little me for a while, but now she's different. So it's cute though. It's fun. Hey, I wanted to let you guys know I just launched my first supplement called After Party. It is a hangover supplement, which is fun. It's available at fullerhealth.com, linked in the comments. The reviews are starting to come in, so I thought I'd just read one. What black magic is this? This is a fun one. I don't know how to qualify how good this product is. I typically drink about the same amount and even kind of beer. Last night I took 3 pills before going to bed. I didn't even take the recommended 2 in the morning. I do recommend you take 2 in the morning as well, but this guy didn't. I woke up not just feeling okay, I felt great. Literally one of my greatest feeling days of the past week, despite the fact that I don't usually drink. Usually I'm sluggish and tired and wanting a nap all day long. Sometimes a bit of nausea if I do drink. This morning was literally nothing. I went to the gym, did stuff around the house, was super productive. I've tried everything, electrolytes, water, food, ibuprofen, sleeping in, etc. They have helped, but this actually worked. Amazing. So, yeah. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. Free shipping in the U.S. It's pure with no fillers. I swear these will help make you more productive following drinking. If you do drink even a little, it's not good for you. And these make a massive difference. They reduce nausea, actual alcohol damage, headaches, and leave you with a nice, calm, chill feeling. Try them. Let me know what you guys think in the reviews. Check out fullerhealth.com, code MP for 15% off. Linked in the comments. Enjoy the rest of this episode. What are the most valuable? This was a bunch of people asked this question. They wanted your opinion on what the most valuable qualities to look for in a man are.
Oh, okay. That's a good question. I would say loyalty is really big. Definitely one of like at least like top 5. Because I think from loyalty, there's so much, like if you're loyal to someone and you care about someone and you're committed to them, there are so many things that are just easier. Like if you're going through something terrible and someone's loyal to you, they're going to want to be there for you emotionally. If you're going through something hard financially, like as a couple and a husband is loyal to you, he's going to, you know, want to be able to do what it takes to help get you guys through this. So I think loyalty is probably one of the biggest ones. And also just having similar values. I'm not saying like you have to like the same politicians necessarily, but like if you're on a date with a guy and you want to get married and he's talking about how he doesn't believe marriage is worth it, then don't waste your time. Like there are so many things in a relationship you're going to have to work on, like as you go, that if already from the start, you're coming at it from different perspectives, it's just going to be an uphill battle. So I would say it's not worth it, which I know like nowadays people's like, oh, all you need is love. I actually don't believe that. I feel like you need a stronger foundation than that. Otherwise, it's going to be really, really hard. After like 10 years, 15 years, if you're just constantly at odds with each other. And I would say like, and it's funny because I was on the culture war with Tim Pool and with Destiny, who is like this liberal. And he actually did make a good point, is that like with relationships, people like online, we often talk a lot about like things like money and personality, like, which obviously matter, but he also made the good point that a lot of a relationship is just like, are you able to live comfortably with someone and spend time with them? And I think that's a really good point. Especially online, like the Red Pill community, they can get really neurotic about like this statistic means that this many women will be interested or whatever it is. But it's like, ultimately, with a relationship, you're going to be living with this person, you're going to be like sharing a life together, you're going to need to be able to be around and enjoy each other's company. So I think people who are like not online perpetually, like I am, they're going to be listening to that and be like, how is that advice? Like, obviously you should like the person you're dating, but I think there are a lot of people online who need to be reminded actually that you should just like your spouse, because like people are more than just their body count or their bank account or how many kids they want to have. So like, don't get too neurotic when you're dating, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. Do you enjoy each other's company? That's a huge one though, because I feel like there are some people that do enjoy each other's company, but then one of the people only wants to hang out a little bit. It's like, oh, I have a great time of hanging out with you, but like for like a couple of hours a day, maybe. Uh-huh. And then how's that going to translate over to like marriage? It's not.
Well, it's also interesting because I know a girl she's like an introvert and she's with an extrovert. And I'm not saying that those relationships can't work, but I know that for her, at least, it actually is hard, because sometimes like for her birthday, she just literally wanted to be able to like go to a hotel and like have alone time, which is like Liam and I are both introverts. So it's like we live together, but we're not always together. Plus we also work together. So, you know, we are very happy some nights to just be like, okay, we're just going to chill out like separately at home. And I feel like if you're not on the same page with that, like one of you is more extroverted and they want more attention, the other one wants to be left alone, like that also could cause some friction. Actually, I know a couple like that too, where the guy is more introverted and he actually says that like he's drained being with his girlfriend. He feels like he needs to almost take vacations after his vacations because she'll have them booked like from like dawn till dusk with different social engagements. And it's tiring for him. Like he's exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah. I think figuring out your personality or at least knowing what you're like and then discussing that frankly with the other person is very important.
Yes.
I knew that if I ended up with somebody who was introverted, I'm so extroverted, like going to coffee shops to be able to work around people, even just so I could see people. I don't even really like people, but I really don't like being alone. So,
right. And if you're with an introvert, that's going to be lonely. You're going to feel like you're cooped up. You want to get out there, but you're almost going to feel like the other person is, you know, if they're not on the same page or willing to let you go out and do your own thing, almost like holding you back or trying to, I guess, like keep you cooped up. So it's hard on both people for sure. If you're not on the same page.
Yeah. And if you're an introvert, you're going to feel like you're drowning all the time.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I think neuroticism too is a huge one that plays a role. Like, I think if one person is an anxious person and is stressed out, they can be with someone who's stable. But I think having two anxious people together is also like not a great idea for long-term success.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think other personality traits might work, but neuroticism and extroversion. Conscientiousness though as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know like, and even like my husband and I, we're pretty well matched on most things, but even like with conscientiousness. So I'm messier than he is. And I feel like unless we were willing to be like, okay, I'm going to keep things tidier than I would personally like, and he's going to have to deal with things not being as tidy as he would like, that's also a point of where that could very easily lead to contention. And it's funny. So I like, have you ever been on like r/relationships or r/ like, am I the asshole? Like there are these posts where people will blow up at each other over like a trivial thing. And everyone in the comments is like, it's not actually about this thing. You guys have deeper issues. And this just happened to be the straw that broke the camel's back. And I feel like if you're not matched on things like introversion versus extroversion, conscientiousness, or even neuroticism, like those kind of underlying tensions kind of set the stage for maybe one day something's going to happen and you're both going to act very uncharitably toward each other, but it's not actually about like that one incident. It's about the resentment or the frustration that's been building up kind of in the background underneath it all.
Yeah, that's perfect. I also think one mistake people can make when they're dating is, this is a mistake that I've made, so that's why I'm bringing it up, but is being interested in someone who's extroverted and isn't conscientious. Like, so they're very disorganized, but they're so much fun. And being like, oh, this could work. Like the extroversion is really showing up here. And then that just doesn't work out long term because all you're seeing is somebody who's extroverted and exciting and maybe ambitious, but the background, the depth isn't there. That's something like, I think women who are attracted to extroverts need to be aware of.
Yeah. And I think there's also, I don't know if men go for it as much, but I could see there are definitely a lot of like online female figures who are maybe like Instagram influencers who might be a similar story. But if a guy actually wants something deeper, that may not be the right person to search for that with.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. What about values men should look for in women?
I would say like, again, loyalty, super important. And for women, and it's funny because like right now there's like, there's a lot of women are getting in the red pill community, especially, which is it's not the same as the conservative movement at all. But, you know, because both communities are critical of feminism and like things like hookup culture, I feel like we kind of exist like adjacent to each other. So women are getting a really bad rap in the red pill community as just like terrible nowadays. And I don't think that's true. There are a lot of good women out there. Like I'm friends with many, many great women. Values that I think it's important, or attributes that I think is important for a woman to have, absolutely, like loyalty and commitment to family. And I feel like there's a lot of selfishness that is being pushed onto women. Not that women are innately more selfish than men. It's just that I feel like society almost tries to tell a lot of young women that it's a good thing for them to be more self-interested as a form of empowerment, which is not something men to the same degree are being told. So it's something that has, I think, blossomed more in women. And I think I would be very wary of that if you're a man, just because, like, I mean, you might think it's just kind of annoying or a quirk, but if you're trying to build a life with someone and they're always looking out mostly for themselves instead of like you guys as a couple or even your kids, I think you're going to find that you don't have as much of a partner as you probably are going to need throughout your life.
Yeah, that's tricky too, because even in the kind of what would the category of people be, like self-help, self-betterment community, I don't know what that community is, but it can be conservative as well. You're told optimize yourself. I think men are actually told this more, is like build up yourself because you're number one, and then everything else will kind of fall into place. And I do think it kind of changes when you get into a relationship where you can't just be number one, at least not all the time, or it doesn't work out. Like you have to be aiming towards the same thing.
And I feel like men are kind of told like build yourself up a lot, which is good. You should build yourself up. But it's like women are told do what makes you happy a lot. I hear that a lot, or like follow your heart and stuff like that. And I don't think that's really good advice. Like, I mean, it's not always the worst advice, but I don't think those are words to live by, because I feel like there are a lot of things that might be fleetingly a good idea or that might feel good at the time or make you happy at the time, but that are ultimately bad decisions in the long term. And I'm like, just on social media, I see the way a lot of young women are behaving, and it's like, I can understand from like a lizard brain perspective why that's making you happy in the moment, but I don't think this is actually what's good for you in the long term.
Yeah, that's true. I got quite sick in university, and I dropped out of university and moved back home and decided to become a makeup artist when I was 20. And my dad almost had a heart attack. He was like, you're not going to be intellectually stimulated. What are you doing with your life? And I was like, and then mom was like, do what your heart wants. And I went to makeup school for about 6 months and just died of boredom there. And I have nothing against, I mean, I learned some makeup tricks and I use makeup all the time, so it's not like it was a waste of time, but there's definitely something to be said, especially when you're young, not necessarily just doing what you think makes you happy. Like ideally you do what makes you happy in the long run, but it's really hard to figure out what actually makes you happy, right? And it's probably not those fleeting things that you appreciate when you're probably under like 23, at least for me. I think my brain fully grew in when I was 23 or 24. Like it took a while.
Yeah. And I feel like when we're younger as well, we think of like happiness just in terms of just like pleasure, what's pleasurable for me in the moment. Whereas I feel when we get older, we start to look for things that are actually more meaningful and that give us fulfillment, which is a different kind of happiness, but sometimes it's the type of fulfillment that actually requires some short-term unpleasantness, whether that's working really hard to set up a business so that you can have something that, you know, you do love doing that's also financially viable, or, you know, even with a family, sometimes that can be really hard work getting set up and, you know, worrying about things like buying a house and stuff like that, but it's for the longer term goal. And that's just something when you're younger, you might think is not worthwhile, but it's like your brain is very different when you're younger. You're not geared toward long-term consequences. So if young people are watching this, I guess my advice would be like, be aware that the choices you make now may not be the ones you would make in the future, which I know if you're young is really hard to hear. I would not have appreciated being told that, but it's true.
Yeah, it is true. You'd also think, you know, what does she know? And I know myself well enough.
Yes.
But maybe some of that could be mitigated by doing more long-term planning. Like, what are the long-term goals you want? And then work towards those. Don't work towards these short-term goals as much, because I think that's probably where the, like, hedonistic stuff comes in. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Like, I don't think you're going to be, you know, how do I want to look as a 50-year-old? I don't think OnlyFans necessarily comes into play there. Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. You talked about the red pill community. What are your, I switched directions on the red pill community. So I don't think I knew very much about it. I just heard of it and I've been thinking, you know, I think they've got some points and I think because of this war on masculinity, the red pill community is warranted because they're supportive of men. I didn't actually realize how much hatred of women was involved in the red pill community until I started doing a little bit more digging. But right. What are your thoughts on people like Fit and Fresh and that kind of group of people? You think it's useful or damaging?
So I've heard about Fit and Fresh. I've never watched any of their podcasts. I think I've seen like clips of them. But I mean, just like my impression of the red pill community as a whole, I think there are some very valid criticisms out there from the red pill community of things like feminism, of things like the court system and the way that it is weighted against men. But the more that I look into the red pill community, it's kind of ironic because, you know, the whole red pill analogy, it comes from the Matrix, and taking the red pill is supposed to symbolize seeing the world as it really is. But there's a lot of narratives that are being pushed in the red pill community that are just not representative of the world as it really is. I feel like in some cases they've almost gone too far the opposite way, believing that, you know, I saw someone online posting that like 80% of divorces are initiated by women, and it's even worse for college educated women. It's 90% of divorces, like, therefore, like, don't marry someone who, like, don't marry a woman who's gone to college. She's like 90% chance she's going to leave you. And it's like, actually, college educated women are much less likely to get divorced than women who've only gone to high school. There's a difference between saying that 90% of college educated women who are married get divorced versus of divorces that happen with college educated women, 90% of them are initiated. Like, that's a different thing. And there's also research going into why divorces are initiated in the first place. And one of the top reasons is infidelity. I think it's pretty hard to argue that the person who cheated is not the one who is responsible for ending the marriage, rather the one who simply submitted the paperwork for it. Like, if we're actually talking about who tore up the relationship here. So there's like a lot of stuff like that, that I feel like there's very cursory research being done, and people are kind of choosing statistics to fit their narrative, which we see all the time in this day and age. It's not specific to the red pill community, but, like, yeah, I appreciate the attempt to push back against a lot of the toxic behaviors that we see. But there's also, you know, I've seen also, I think from Fresh and Fit, we can condemn female promiscuity, but they almost defend male promiscuity, which is like, okay, yeah. Well, that's very strange. And like, if I often hear feminists being called hypocrites. I don't know how you can have that position without it also being very, very hypocritical.
I feel like that's new. Now, I'm not that familiar with red pill stuff, but from what I'd seen in like 2012-ish, I didn't remember.
I think it was like that in 2012 either.
Yeah, like that seems to be something that's like since 2020, where it was, oh, men are supposed to be promiscuous and have multiple women, but women are always attached to one alpha male. That seems to have popped up in the last like 3 years. I don't even know how that started.
Because Cassie J, like, she did a movie called The Red Pill, and it was basically just about men's rights issues, which I think are very important, and kind of criticizing a lot of the more radical parts of modern day feminism, which, again, like, I think if that's all it was, I'm on board with that. And I think there are some people in the red pill community who still speak on that, and that's great. But there's also like very weird narratives that they've started inserting surrounding relationships, which is where I'm like, I don't know where you're getting this, where they're basically telling men not to be in relationships with women at all. And it's like, you sound like a rad femme. Like, you sound exactly like a rad femme right now. And it's funny because I've seen so many feminists say that marriage and children are a patriarchal invention. And I've also seen red pillars say that marriage and children are a matriarchal invention, and it's only women who are trying to trap you. And it's like, what? Men want to get married and have kids too. Like, that can make a man happy as well. It's not like, it's just very strange. I think a lot of the people in those communities just need to go outside and touch grass and speak to someone of the opposite sex who is not online, frankly.
Well, I'm glad you've noticed that too. I think the reason why I was kind of on board with red pill things was because it was different. Just like the liberals were different pre-2012, I swear the red pill community was different too. And it was more based around men's rights and less based around women hatred. Not a huge fan of it at the moment.
Yeah. And I feel like for people who are watching this, who aren't familiar with the red pill community, the term woman hatred gets like misused a lot, but there are actually like, this is, we're being serious here. Like I've seen like female nature is just to lie and deceive. And it's like the male nature is honorable. And like all of these, like what, like this is a caricature. What are you guys talking about? It's actually, it's hilarious. It's basically as ridiculous as some of the extreme feminist stuff you would read, but instead of ragging on men, they're ragging on women.
Yeah, that was a good clarification. This isn't this isn't like liberal women hatred.
This is like actual, yeah.
I think I got aggravated by it because I got divorced and I got the people that were after me online were from the red pill community who have like no idea about, and I haven't made anything public about like why I got divorced or anything. I'm not going to.
Right.
But I think growing up, I had a view. Because my dad did have conservative values, even though I said that it was kind of a liberal household. He had very conservative values on marriage. And obviously, a stable family is better for children if that's something that you can manage. But I think, and that was solidly my view. And then I ended up in a situation where I needed to get divorced. And it was such a, like, mind fuck, for lack of a better word, because I was like, this isn't something that would happen to me. I'm really like, I think I'm good at negotiating. Am I bad at negotiating? Like, why can't I make this work? What's wrong with me? And why can't I make this work? And then it gave me a lot more sympathy for I think divorces. And I don't know, like the statistics around divorces are pretty rough. There are a lot of people getting divorced. And my view used to be, well, that's because people aren't taking marriage seriously. And then you see celebrities like it was Emma Ratajkowski, probably saying that wrong, who went viral being like, oh, I think it's like chic.
I think
it's chic to be divorced by the time you're 30, which is, I think, what the red pill community looks at and is like, that's what a woman is. But, and so that was what my view of people who got divorced were people who weren't taking marriage seriously. But then it happened to me and I feel like, well, that left me with more compassion. I probably went too far in the other direction where it's like, oh, you got divorced. What happened to you? Like something must have happened. Whereas before the divorce, I was more on the side of, well, why didn't you negotiate your way out of it? Something's your fault. So that's probably where the like more irritation at the red pill community came from. Just like lack of compassion.
There is a huge lack of compassion. And I've seen things about like single mothers and like they are selfish. It's like, well, you don't know, like if someone like is collecting welfare and just trying to like have as many kids as possible with different baby daddy, like, yeah, obviously that's repulsive behavior. But it's like, I know single moms who are single moms because their husband, their father, like they've literally abandoned them. Like how, like, and people like, oh, well, that's a fringe case. Like, how do you know how much of a fringe or not fringe case it is? That's the thing. Like you don't care either. You'd rather just condemn people based on your gender stereotypes. And that's frustrating to me. And I also don't think it's constructive to help people. And also like, you know, talking about the idea that red pill is supposed to mean reality. It's just you're so far into your rabbit hole of just like wanting to see the world as you think it is, i.e. women are evil, that like, do you really think that for like the 75% of children who are born as single mothers in the Black community, that there are just like their fathers are begging to take care of them more and the moms are like, no, I'm going to like withhold custody because I hate you. Like, cause obviously that's not what's happening. So yeah, there's just frustrations that I have there. Because it's just like, again, it's not representative of reality, which is supposed to be what the red pill community is about.
Yeah, that was very well said. That was very well said. That was much more lucid than what I was going to say. That was great.
I had time to like fume over this like on Twitter. So
I was like, I'm not going to get involved, but it's too annoying. It's too bothersome. Okay, last question. How do you manage criticism? Because you are like a popular conservative voice. And so how do you manage the stress of online criticism?
That's actually a really good question. And I feel like that's something I've gotten better at as time has gone on. Like, I don't know if do you remember the first mean comment you ever got?
Probably not like casually mean, but I definitely remember when there were a number of them about one topic and it was extremely stressful.
Yeah, right. Because people don't talk to each other like that in the real world. And
yeah,
if you're in a regular job, you're almost never going to be in a situation where you just have like random people say terrible things to you. So
yeah.
I remember the first time I got like a lot of criticism on like a video too. And I was kind of like, I couldn't believe that someone would say that to me. It was like, it stressed me out. It was, you know, I felt the need to address everything. And the longer I've kind of been online, I've come to realize that actually you don't need to address every criticism. And that doesn't mean that you ignore all criticism, but it's just being able to discern like what is a troll, what is just malicious versus actually legitimate. Like, oh, maybe I'll like, this is something I should think about in introspection. And it's like, I've told myself with like response videos, I very much maintain anyone can make a response video to me. Oh, like that's your right as a video creator. I make response videos. But I no longer, and maybe I shouldn't say this in case there's like an egregious one I want to respond to, but I no longer like will respond to an individual video about me because I feel like there's just the risk that it becomes too much about saving my own ego versus actually addressing criticism. So I guess my approach now is that, you know, don't address specific people, but if there's a criticism that keeps coming up across different people, different videos, maybe then it's something to consider. But simultaneously, I also kind of believe that if you wouldn't take advice from someone, you probably shouldn't worry too much about their criticism. Because there are like, you know, there are a lot of specifically leftists out there who hate everything I do. And at certain points, like you can't please these people. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm at a pretty mm-hmm. good place where I don't let it bother me, but at the same time, I never want to be at a place where I think no criticism is valid, because that's not true of anybody. Like everyone's got something to be criticized about.
Yeah. I think you just get used to it and then you're like, oh, yeah. it shouldn't evoke this kind of emotional response as it did at the beginning.
Right. I've seen people, kind of like other online creators who get really popular really fast and they're really good at what they do, but they actually end up essentially rage quitting because of the criticism, because it gets to you. And I know like if you're not in that position, it might seem like, well, you were like this huge YouTuber or Twitter personality and you just like, you quit because people were mean to you online. And it's like, it almost sounds like, why would you give it up? But as I understand, like, I don't think I would do it myself, but I understand it. Cause if, you know, if you're the type of person, who is maybe very like, I don't want to say more sensitive because it almost sounds like you're just dismissing their feelings, but I understand how that is really hard on people. And for some people, it just might not be worth it. Like the money you might be able to make or the popularity you might be able to have, it's just not worth it to your mental health at a point.
It's also understandable because you grow up taking, say in high school, like when you get negative feedback, sometimes it's because your behavior is wrong. And so you get all this negative feedback and it kind of helps hone you into the person you are. Like people need the negative feedback and they need to experience negativity towards that, especially if they're acting out. So as a kid, like you can't just be this wild kid or your friends aren't going to like you. And then them not liking you changes your behavior in a positive way. But that's
helps
not
you conform.
Yeah. But then that's not exactly how it works. If you have a massive audience and you have a whole bunch of like losers that are coming after you. For lack of a better descriptor. What are you going to do? Okay, so that wasn't the last question. Do you have any tentative plan for your kiddo? Like, and social media?
Am I going to let her on social media? Or
yeah, or are there, have you put into in any thought about how you're going to tell her how to respond to social media?
That's a good question. I mean, we haven't really put in thought about how we're going to help her respond to social media. Like in terms of, we definitely don't want her to have her own social media accounts young. You know, my husband and I, we've discussed like having kind of like old school, a family computer, a family tablet, just so we can all like, there's a lot of things that could happen online to a kid that maybe were still possible when I was younger, but I think are just so much more likely now. And it's kind of hard because as a parent with something like a cell phone, I understand wanting to be able to reach your kid, especially if they're at a friend's house or something, that communication is valuable. But I think like, you know, even if they're a teen, like we have Liam's cousins, they have cell phones, but they're not smartphones. And I think that's a pretty good, that's a pretty good balance of wanting to make sure that they're reachable for safety reasons, but also that, you know, there's a lot of apps, Snapchat, I think Instagram as well, that I just don't see how they could be beneficial to a teen. And I say that as someone who spends a lot of time on social media, but that's why I know that they're not very healthy things. I don't think they're a good place for anybody really, let alone especially a young person.
Yeah, it's tricky. So that's kind of how I've been leaning. But then I also am concerned that Scarlett will go to school and then everybody, it doesn't matter if everybody at school is doing something your kid shouldn't do. That doesn't mean that you should just do it. But I also don't want her to be the kid that doesn't do something everybody else does. And so I've spent quite a bit of time thinking, are there boundaries I could put in so that it was safe? So that she's not alienated if her entire, like, I don't know what's going to happen in 5 years, what kids are going to be like or what school is going to be like. Like, are there boundaries you can put in place? And I guess we'll see like how things develop, but
it's hard.
It's tricky.
It's really hard, especially like, I have a family member who is, I think, 9, and her parents aren't letting her have TikTok, but guess what? She has friends who are on TikTok and then they watch TikTok together. So it's like, okay, well, basically your child now has TikTok. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying, like, another thing to consider with school is also your peer choice. You don't want to be overprotective as a parent, but also like, you don't want to, via proxy, just allow someone else to essentially decide how your parenting goes or decide what your kid is exposed to. So it's really hard. And it's just with social media, it's a lot harder than I think previous generations have had it. Like, our parents didn't have to navigate this to the extent that we are.
Yeah. I got in enough trouble over MSN.
Yeah.
And that was just, MSN. Yeah, it was just MSN. And that led to a host of problems. And that is nothing like what kids are dealing with now.
Exactly. I remember when I was in like 5th and 6th grade, there was like a lot of drama that was happening over MSN. So
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Do you remember Honesty Box on Facebook?
No.
Okay. Really early on in like super early Facebook days, there was something called Honesty Box, and you could go on somebody's profile and leave them a comment nobody could see except you and them, but it was completely anonymous.
Oh, I could see how that would be very damaging to people.
They got rid of that really quickly. I think it was in there for 2 years and it was just a mess. So
I could imagine. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, thank you very much for coming on. That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a fun chat.